It's time for the first sports voice in Las Vegas, The Press Box, with Clay Baker and Ed Graney on ESPN Las Vegas.
Oh!
Let's go!
TGIF is right. We wait for this day all week. It's ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. It's Ed and Clay. Thanks for joining us.
Woo!
First sports voice in not Boston, Las Vegas. Who's got the accent going this morning, Clay Baker?
I don't know there, Mr. B. Mr. Baston.
Mr. Boston, this is going to be a good show. 7:30. We'll get into this UNLV hiring attorneys to check out the Michael Avenatti suggestion that Nike paid Brandon McCoy. UNLV has hired a law firm. And what you think about that at 7:30, 7:48, Ryan Wallace, Ryan Hockey Guy in the NHL playoffs and the referees, the situations there. I've waited for this. You need to hear this. This will be awesome. 8:18, Stump the Wizard. The wizard that is Clay Baker, at Clay the producer.
Hi-ya!
This kid's the smartest guy I've ever known. Between me and Rob Mish, we will try to stump the wizard each week. Now, Mish is one of these weird trivia guys also. He has passed on a few questions to start off. We are doing this every Friday now, whether you like it or not.
This isn't good for me.
Well,
this
it's is not like... good for you, but it's good for me. And that's really what this is all about.
Yeah, the whole point of this is to make me look bad.
Yes, nothing
good can come from this.
Well, it can for me.
And then Mish is sitting on like a wealth of knowledge, and that's
He's a knowledgeable guy. This is one of the few times that I will, at least for a 10-minute section, feel a lot smarter than you. So, yes, this is very good for me. At 8:30, good friend Doug Kazarian from ESPN, he's going to talk about the Caesars ESPN deal. Hey, is Dougie K headed back to Vegas? We don't know. We'll ask him at 8:30. 9 o'clock, Steph McKenzie. Why? At 9:30, we'll DJ Allen, Coaches vs. Cancer, Coach Kruger, and all the coaches are in town yet again for an incredible golf tournament and fundraiser they put on for cancer research. I think it's been, man, $5 million over 12 years. Coach Kruger has just done an incredible wonderful job doing that for this city and for cancer as a whole. But he's held it here in this city. He keeps coming back each year, even after he left for Norman, Oklahoma. So good job by Lon Kruger. DJ Allen, his good friend, will be with us at 9:30 to talk coaches versus cancer.
We're here.
There we go.
We made
there
it.
There we go.
We made it to the big game. Center stage. Every one of you, all give yourselves a clap on the head.
Here we go. You play my Imagine Dragons now, don't you? Is this just a Friday thing? Or is this played every day? Usually I'm not paying enough attention.
Maybe twice a week sometimes, like Monday, Friday combos. It's Pavlovian response for you, though, because you're like, oh, this must be Friday.
Yeah, because Imagine Dragons are playing. Monday, we're excited about this, and we're going to open up the phone lines. We hope you're interested. Sunday night will be the Game of Thrones finale. Do you even want a gander guess? Now, HBO is different. I think HBO is different in terms of ratings, right? Because it's not network, but they can certainly have somewhat a sense of how many people watch their shows. So do we even want a 69187? Maybe we'll give some, we'll get you a prize. We'll get Mark to give us a prize here. 69187 for this show only, and we'll keep track here. Tell us how many millions of people you believe will be announced to watch that finale. And we're assuming that HBO will come out with a number. They have to, because this thing is going to be absolutely massive on Sunday night. I can't even gander a guess right now. I have no idea.
I was thinking like, all right, the last time we had like a big blockbuster shared community on any sporting event may have been the atrocious Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight,
right?
Where I think they had like some sort of number on impressions, or maybe like how many people actually were in a room seeing the fight, and how did that match up to the rest of the country? And I think it was like one out of 10, one out of 12 people in the country had watched it. So that's a big number.
Okay, so now we know. Okay, so here's the thing: we'll give you what HBO said happened last week with how many people watch, and then you can text in this morning and throughout our show. Clay will stop it at 10 o'clock at 6987. You tell us how many you think will watch
right this
week, and the closest person to it, you know, we'll get you something. We'll get you some tickets, hopefully to Summer League. We'll put something together for you. Last week, HBO said there were 18.4 million viewers I've got to be honest with you. I thought that's low. Like, I was expecting. I almost am now happy I didn't say the number out loud that I thought, because I thought for sure there'd be more watching this. Maybe it's just because everyone you and I are know or so into the show. Maybe it doesn't translate as maybe as you thought across the country or world or whatever. But 18.4 million viewers watched last week. The week before, I'll give you this, 17.8. So, okay, you kind of get a gauge here on what Game of Thrones offers in terms of viewers. So 69187, and you know, we'll kind of try to keep up with your guesses.
Yeah, it makes me feel like, all right, what?
I swear, I thought, I can't even believe there weren't 20 million.
Yeah, right. Like, there has to be like some sort of.
Well, it's obviously HBO subscribers, right?
Yeah. Well, all right. Well,
I mean, how many total HBO subscribers are there? There's not more than 20 million. There's got to be a lot more than that, right? HBO? I'm completely sure. Maybe I'm lost on these numbers.
Yeah, I'm a little lost on it, too, because maybe there's not a good way to index it or to really quantify how many numbers are on HBO or on cable, because I don't think it falls under your normal.
Well, it certainly doesn't fall under the normal ratings.
Not under the normal quantitative like Nielsen ratings, but what. MASH in what 1980 had their final episode, and that was supposed to be like the hallmark show, where it's like the world's largest audience for any one TV show. It was their final episode, and it had 120 million people watching
it. And that MASH was right. The one. Now, okay, so this puts it in perspective. I've got to be honest with you, because I do believe, well, certainly in the HBO world, Game of Thrones is one of, if not their all-time greatest shows. That's hard because they've had some incredible shows, but it's one of them. Let's be honest, it's in the handful of the great shows HBO's ever come up with. As of 2016, total subscribers for HBO, which included HBO Comedy, HBO Latino, HBO Signature, HBO Family, all the HBOs.
Right.
In 2016, so we know it's more now, 130 million. So that gives you a sense, and I've got to be honest with you, as I see these numbers, I'm becoming more and more surprised that Game of Thrones last week, one episode left before the finale, drew 18.5 or 7 million viewers. Now, they say viewers. Again, these are weird numbers because, you know, I'm a subscriber in my house. What if I have 40 people in my house to watch? I'm more like HBO to tell me how many of your 130 or 50 million subscribers had it turned on, because who knows how many people are in the house. That's a hard number. You don't know who's really watching, right? I always hate that viewer thing. Well, how do you know how many people in the house?
Maybe it's a total stab in the dark. It really is. You can't.
But are you surprised? So in 2016, all of HBO's platforms had 130 million subscribers. And so let's say, I don't know, 3 years later, let's say they have 150. I don't know. I can't quantify each year how many subscribers HBO either loses or adds. Let's just round it up and say they have 150 million subscribers. 18.7 million?
That's not enough.
Am I missing?
It doesn't look like a lot.
It doesn't seem like a lot.
It's also an adult show, though. It's not a show that you you bring the kids around.
I don't want to bring myself around some of those weeks with the heads and all the killing and stuff. I mean, you know, other than to see Aaron Rodgers being blown up.
But. Well, I think that has a lot to do with it. It's not for like, you know, ages 12 and under, you know, and stuff like that. And I don't think it really captures the imagination of like family time around the couch. Maybe
well,
it does.
You're right. Okay, and I said in my house. Okay, so. A perfect example, two parents, two young adults, only one in the house that watches it or likes it. Now, the son started to binge watch it like a year ago. And I actually asked him the other day when he got home from college, I said, hey, did you ever finish? He said, no. He went on to other, went on to other things.
Right, right.
Wife and daughter absolutely laugh at me for watching it, because every time they walk in, for some reason I have horrible timing with the show. Every time I walk in, the damn dragon's killing someone, and they start laughing at me like you're watching something with a dragon. Like they don't get the sense of the history and the characters.
Nope.
Every time they walk in, she's telling the dragon to blow someone away. And they're like, yeah, really, you're watching this thing again? You're watching the dragon flying around? That's really realistic.
And you do look bad. Yeah, you look bad, Derek.
I look horrible. So the wife and daughter have never taken to it. The son tried to binge watch it, and he went on. I'm sure there was an NBA game that caught his attention. And he had to come off the Game of Thrones. So I'm the only one who has been obsessed from pretty much the start. My friend Joe Covington, a year into it, I'll never forget this. We were driving to California on a softball trip, Mr. Covington and myself. And he said, what about Game of Thrones? I said, what's that? This is a year into the series. He goes, oh, come on. I go, I have no idea what you're talking about. We get the laptop out. I've got the wireless network. I watched on HBO Go the first episode.
So did you have to pay the $15 a month for the HBO Go?
No, he had his. It was through his HBO Go.
Okay,
he set me up. I never looked back. I saw the first episode. 5 seconds in, Ed Stark's cutting some guy's head off. And I said, this is the greatest thing ever. And I never looked back. So I became obsessed. The family laughed at me the whole time about because they said, what's it about?
Well, and look how quickly the family has grown up and away from you. You know, like the kids are growing up.
They've grown away from
Bonnie's
me for years.
Starting to run. Bonnie's just going to keep on running.
She's been a marathon runner now ever since Game of Thrones began. No, but it's just...
What's going to happen to you when this thing is over?
Oh, it's going to stink, man. Hey, two of the all-time classics on my Sunday night viewing. Last week, Veep ended, which was just, I thought was a really good ending and funny with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You know, she's one of my all-time favorites, top five ever.
She's totally loaded. She's got a whole rock mind. She's full of money.
She's amazing. She's amazing. But so she ended it last week. I thought she kind of rushed the ending. I thought both of these shows, and that's been a big contentious kind of story across, well, at least the country. I mean, I'm sure the world also, in terms of how they've, the perception is how they've rushed the Game of Thrones ending. Like they didn't do a final full season. I think had they done a final full season, everybody would be like, all right, because you get that. Seinfeld ended, MASH ended, you know, things end. But man, they have the last 3 weeks. They have rushed storylines to where they are just kind of and Veep was like that with her also. Now she had been sick off camera. She had battled cancer, so you don't know how much that goes into it in terms of her. Like, all right, I got to do a final season, but you know we need to move on from this. So I kind of got that. But Game of Thrones, I don't know. I think you know there are stories out now. People wanting them to reshoot the final season, which obviously is never going to happen. But, you know, why can't you redo this? Why did you rush it?
Well, I kind of felt that in the last episode when the dragon just kept firing around the neighborhood. It was like, all right, there could be more scenes and stuff. I get the fact that you know the dragon's going around, but they devoted, I'd like to count up how many minutes were devoted just of just a fire-breathing dragon blowing down the neighborhood.
Cersei just watching the neighborhood go down.
Right. And like instead of doing more story, and, yes. And more dialogue, yeah. And as things were happening, in fact, a lot of it was silent.
Just for watching them destroy everything, and
like not one sentence of dialogue had happened in 20 minutes. So it's like pretty strange. I kind of thought that maybe they took their eyes off the work a little bit and just
they dropped the swords, and all of a sudden you see Daenerys and the dragon, and they drop the swords, and then she makes a decision to say screw that, let's go. And for the next 20 minutes, the dragon's just destroying Summerlin and Henderson in one full swoop.
They could have done that in maybe like 5 minutes instead of the entire movie. You could have moved on to more story. That's all I'm saying. But I think they kind of
they just rushed it. And you know the way Cersei died, it was almost like, did you just kind of decide this that day? Did anyone write this? Did anyone sit back and say, okay, one of the most villainous, hated, vile characters, main characters, the Walk of Shame, I don't think it was her, but golf clap anyway.
Why not?
But one of the most vile characters in the history of that show, we're going to have her die by kind of getting crushed under the castle. It's like, with Jaime standing next to her. It's like, they were such main characters. And the way other people died in that show, you almost wanted to say, was this done over the craft table when they were trying to get the Starbucks cup off the thing, off the one scene? It was really, I don't know, how you came up with her death?
Those kind of deaths even are almost open-ended because you could almost survive deaths like that.
Might pop up in the finale.
She might pop up, right? That's what I'm saying.
Everyone assumes she's dead.
You'll see her hand crawling through a pile of rubble. Like
now, like Jaime, she's losing hands as well.
69187 on the text line. They ask, what about the Michigan State Indiana State 1979 game? That was a big rating. That was a huge national audience game. The Larry Bird Magic Johnson game, right?
Let me see.
Okay,
I'll get it right now.
I remember the number's 24, and I think they had like a 24 rating, and that was big because think about it. You got a Monday that could take over, you know, all programming. In 1979, there's three channels you're working with, and you could probably say, all right, that it had a whopping rating. I don't think anything's ever come close to that as far as like maybe a couple Super Bowls, but that's pretty much it. Like over the course of time, I think that 1979 game is held out, but it didn't have 120 million viewers. It had something like, like 50 million viewers or something like that, just because it was pared down to just on a game on a Monday. And everyone was watching it because there was nothing else on.
I'm trying to get this now because they're talking about, over and over and over of how many games tried to get to that number in the NCAA tournament. NCAA, you're right. They always point to the 79 game Magic versus Larry. Okay, 79, but this was an enormous rating. So a couple years ago when Carolina beat Gonzaga, I'm reading from this story, you know, that was Zach Collins in the championship. A couple years ago, in 2016, it was a really, really well-watched game. It was a 14.5, which was a 21% bump from the previous year.
And
so
that's
a big number.
Yeah.
Okay, you say, man, 14.5 is a big number. The national title tilt in 1979... between Magic and Larry, 24.1.
Yeah, yeah.
So sure. That's, I'm sorry. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you're going to know this, the Wizard, with all the different platforms now of how you can watch games and television, right? And at this, will 24.1 be broken? If 2 years ago you had North Carolina national team like that and a team like Gonzaga, who I'm sure at that, I remember, I mean, people falling in love with that team because, like, hey, Gonzaga might win this thing, man. This might be the time that a Gonzaga gets, you know, through and wins.
Everyone wanted to see
it. Yes, everyone wanted to see that except Mark Seidel. He was the only person really in the world who wanted Carolina. But they drew 14. That's 10 points lower than what Magic and Larry drew. Does anyone get close to that anymore? That is an enormous. What are Super Bowls, in the 40s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
36s and 40s,
okay.
Yeah.
But for a college basketball game to be in the 20s, one game?
Just one game that goes, maybe it's like a three-hour thing, right? Because Super Bowls go from like noon to 6:30 at night, right? Maybe they have like that huge coverage window, so you get a larger rating. But for a small national championship game, 3 hours with pre- and post-game, that's pretty much it.
That was Dick Enberg, Billy Packer, and Al McGuire on NBC. Think of this. So last week's Game of Thrones, Clay and I just told you, 18 million viewers, which again, I'm glad I didn't put out my first number. I'd look like even more of an idiot than I usually do because that shocked me. Because, you know, if we're saying HBO has 150 million subscribers, I can't believe only 18 million watch that show. Maybe only because I'm of the obsessed people with this show. But that night in 1979, March 26th of 79, when Magic's team defeated Larry 75-64 at the Special Events Center in Salt Lake City, 35.1 million people watched that one game. Last week with Game of Thrones, 18 million. Which, I'm not going to say lessens Game of Thrones because I just think it's a fabulous, fabulous show, and I think they've done things on TV that others haven't. But just put that in perspective in 2019, that many years later, of what that game between Larry and Magic meant to so many people. 35 million people watched that game.
That's amazing.
And that's, it was insane.
Like, for like a community, like a shared experience, that's pretty amazing. On a just a distant Monday in April. That's all it is. Because really,
no, that's all it was.
And they didn't do coverage like they do now for that. Here's one from the text line, 69187. Dragon shows are for kids. Okay, well, that's kind of unfair. The overall thing, though, is that for the Game of Thrones and the way the rating system's now, and you asked the question, do you think like anyone will ever pop over the 79 title game? I think the current TV system ratings are archaic. They're old.
I agree with that.
They're
stodgy. I've thought that for a while.
And
I agree with that.
We only need to look at the NFL ratings, how they keep saying, well, the ratings are down. I don't think the ratings are down the way you think they are, because everyone's watching on different formats and devices. They're watching on their phones. They're watching on their computers.
There's so many platforms now.
There's PlayStation. There's watching. So look, and those are not quantified by the archaic Nielsen numbers. In fact, radio, to be honest with you, also their ratings archaic as well.
Okay, so here's a list real quick before we go to break. This is interesting. So we're comparing Game of Thrones, 18 million, to that NCAA basketball game, 34 million, 34, 35 million. MASH, as Clay said, all-time leader, 105.9 million. This is the finales. Roots, 100 million, they're two. Cheers,
wow.
Cheers, three, 84.4. The finale of The Fugitive, 78 million. In 1967.
That's extremely significant.
That's extremely significant. The Fugitive in 1967, the rating was they got a 72 share. Over almost half of America watched the finale of The Fugitive. The next one, top five, Seinfeld, 76 million. Okay, then there's Friends, Magnum PI, The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, Cosby Show, All in the Family. Remember that basketball game? So it's 35 million. The finale of Magic and Larry in that one game drew more viewers than the finales of Frasier. This is Dallas. Now, J.R. Ewing.
I was going to say,
that's amazing.
Who shot J.R.?
Yeah.
Is that episode?
Well, it was the finale, so it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
It was the all-time finale.
Oh,
the final
season
episode.
Eight. Season eight. They were totally drunk on champagne. He was even Larry Hagman started to direct, and he was awful.
But still, think about that. That one game outdrew the finale of Dallas, outdrew the finale of Everybody Loves Raymond, outdrew the finale of Star Trek, outdrew the finale of, here's one, you laugh.
I am.
It outdrew the finale of Happy Days. That's amazing that got more than Happy Days, as popular as Happy Days was, Newhart, The Golden Girls, and Gunsmoke. So that kind of puts in perspective that Larry Magic Game, I think we forgot how massive that thing was.
Ron Howard came back for that final episode of Happy Days. They weren't all Happy Days.
Hey, our friend David Benjamin gave me a script of that, and it's on the mantle at the house. Absolutely. Yes, I have a mantle. Yes, I'm living in the past.
It has a Brad in it. It's an actual script from the episode.
Yes, our good friend David Benjamin.
Thank you, David.
Take care of yourself, brother. Let's keep us up to date on what's happening out there, David Benjamin. Good friend of the show. But that's crazy. So, you know what? Text Clay your guess. We'll try to get some text Clay on Game of Thrones. I'm way off. I wouldn't have won anything because I would have had a much higher number last week if you asked me on Game of Thrones viewers and it was 18 million. I would have thought it was far more. Than 18 million. I am way off on this stuff.
Maybe it's times like this where they have to go and say, look, we have to go and figure out a real TV rating now because there are certain phenomenal shows and events that aren't getting the ratings. They are probably indicative of the reality of the situation where the entire country is watching this.
Do you think people like us who are obsessed with Game of Thrones and want it so badly lend some perspective in that the texter is right. It's like, look, it's a dragon show and it's for adults. There are not as many people like it as you think. Because when you're in it, like the Seinfeld thing, I mean, I drive my family crazy. I still, to this day, will quote everything, will talk about it, will watch it. If it's on, I will watch it for the 7,000th time. They don't understand it. They can't get in that mode of you've seen this thing 7,000 times. So when you're so into shows, do you think you don't realize how many people probably aren't into that show?
Yes, that's the scary part where you feel like now I feel a little more like isolated from everyone
else. Now when
else.
You see that number, I'm like, boy, it's not. I mean, it's big, but I'm sorry. If those numbers, and you know, we just looked it up and they wrote a story, it was New York Times this week, that 18 million watched last week. I'm shocked at that number. If you tell me the subscribers are 150 and only 18 of those watched.
You thought you were mainstream, but you're a niche, man.
Yeah, we're hockey. We're a niche.
Will you get replay? Will you finally start reviewing some calls?
There'll be a column in the paper on Sunday on that, my friend. Going strong with the replay. Either get it or shut up. I don't want to hear anything about replay anymore. All right, I've got something to run by Ryan, the hockey guy, at 7:48. He'll be with us on. A writer actually had a good idea, I think, yesterday about limiting the number of refs on ice, and we'll ask Ryan and the hockey guy his views on that coming up at 7:48. When we come back, though, UNLV has hired a law firm to look into the Michael Avenatti charges that Nike paid Brandon McCoy. UNLV doing the due diligence. Back after this.
Start your engines.
7:23 on your Friday morning. We have a crash on 95 southbound at I-15 southbound at the on-ramp. So the right shoulder is blocked, and big delays are happening on 95 southbound as we speak. Other accidents include 95 southbound at Ann. We have police activity there. We have traffic hazards on 15 northbound approaching Lake Mead Boulevard. Other accidents are on Durango near Deer Springs, as well as Charleston at Betty Lane, Rainbow at Desert Inn, Cactus at Jones. Traffic brought to you by Finley Chevrolet on the 215 Beltway, home of the Woo!
Prices are so low that pigs are flying right now at Finley Chevrolet.
Woo!
Finley Chevrolet is now the number one Chevrolet Woo! Volume dealership west of Texas. Finley Chevrolet, home of the
Woo!
Located on the 215 Beltway between Rainbow and Jones. Find new roads.
As Las Vegas continues to grow, Yes Air Conditioning and Plumbing is growing right along with it. Do you have what it takes to be a Yes Man? Yes is currently seeking Las Vegas's top talent in
8-4. Or visit UniversalMensClinic.com. Activation additional.
Bounces to Juston on the left side to McCoy at the foul line. McCoy spins. McCoy puts up with the left
hand.
And in. Terrific move. Foul on Dalton. A chance for a three-point play by Brandon.
Great move by the big man.
McCoy put on the floor as it knocked away. Mooring able to pick it up. Mooring back to McCoy. McCoy lays it up and in, and a foul. Well, it wasn't pretty, but a nice pass from JoJo to Brandon McCoy.
Jordy front court.
Jordy comes right side. Jordy reverses to McCoy. A three for Brandon.
Wow.
It's good!
It's the Press Box on ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM.
Headline Review Journal. UNLV gets law firm to probe McCoy bribery allegations. UNLV from Mark Anderson has hired the law firm of Bond, Schoenick and King to investigate claims by attorney Michael Avenatti that a representative for Brandon McCoy received improper inducements from Nike to send the coveted basketball recruit to play for the Rebels. Avenatti on Thursday shared emails between himself and UNLV with a review journal that show the school had hired attorneys Mike Glazer and Jason Montgomery and intend to look further into the allegations. Avenatti, in a text message, "I will fully cooperate with UNLV, Duke, Arizona, Oregon, the NCAA, and all other schools that relates to Nike's bribery scandal to illegally control college basketball. So far, only UNLV has contacted me, which is telling. What is Duke and others afraid of the truth?" Avenatti later told Yahoo Sports that Oregon is launching its own investigation into Nike and former Ducks and Finley prep player Bol Bol. UNLV declined comment Thursday, instead referring to a statement from 3 weeks ago that universities continue to look at the matter. McCoy played one season at UNLV before turning pro. Later in the article, on April 6th, Avenatti posted documents on Twitter that he said proved that McCoy's guardian, Sean Manning, Ice Manning, received a total of $15,000 over three separate payments from Nike in July of 16 to August of 16. UNLV then issued a statement that it was still investigating, and Nike said it would not respond to allegations of an individual facing federal charges of fraud and distortion. There's a lot to this, but I think at the end of the day, also Yahoo Danny Wetzel reported last night that Arizona's also hired attorneys. I don't think the insinuation that UNLV is the only school with attorneys looking into this, I think that's wrong. And I think they should all look into it. And that's where we're going to go with this. And I want to ask you, Clay, because on Twitter, I go back and forth with people on Twitter until they drop F-bombs and then I'm done with them. So they got to know that. If you can just make an intelligent comment without dropping F-bombs about people, that makes no sense.
Is that the Game of Thrones way?
Yes, it's the Game of Thrones way. Okay, you swear on Twitter, you're out with me. Because you can make a statement without, you know, dropping F-bombs. And people on Twitter are like, why, why do these other schools? Why should you believe this guy? Why should you look this? This guy's, he's charged with 36 counts of fraud, and then it's true. I mean, Avenatti's facing 36 counts of fraud, tax evasion, and alleged crimes. He's also in another case, trying to bilk millions of dollars from Nike last month. In terms of an extortion case, that you're going to give me money or I'm going to tell everything that happened with Nike.
Right, he's in big trouble because he was trying to. If he had any information. He came about it the wrong way of when he was going to divulge that he had information. Trying to get money ahead of time, that's never a good thing. But at the same time, the way you go about it makes it feel like you don't have any information that we don't know already. And by the way, you've just totally destroyed your own name and credibility and the fact that you are now going to be the saint that has the keys to the kingdom that's going to be like, you're going to blow the lid off something. You haven't done anything. I mean, look, March 27th, he starts sending out these tweets, right?
Yes.
And one of them, it says, what's the real reason McCoy, a five-star recruit, went to struggling UNLV? What does Sean Manning, his guardian, know about it? That's all he puts in there.
Well, that were questions we were all asking at the time. Like, why don't you chose UNLV over working? Well, hold on. Anyway.
So when you leave these open-ended statements like that, it's like when you're just trying to continue to drum up headlines, and we need the substance. We needed the substance with the headline, not until we have to go and pry it away from you as you go under all these other, all these other allegations and for fraud and extortion. That's... you have to go and investigate it as UNLV, but at the same time, man, Avenatti, I don't know if he has anything at all.
Well, I don't know either. I think at this point, the way I treat Michael Avenatti, again, is a person who is charged with 36 counts of fraud, tax evasion, and other alleged crimes. He's pled not guilty to all charges. Yesterday he finally found a lawyer. He had found difficulty finding a lawyer in New York to represent him. And on a separate federal extortion case, that's the Nike case in which he tried to bilk allegedly millions of dollars from Nike. So these cases are going to take a while to get to trial. I think he's in serious trouble when the feds are charging you with 36 counts. I think you better be really good on the attorney side at that point to get to skate there. But we don't know. He'll get his day in court in both cases, and that's what he should. He should be able to get his day in court and his ability to prove if he's innocent, he's pled not guilty. That aside, people who on Twitter yesterday were going back and forth with me asking why should any of these schools now hire lawyers to see if this guy's telling the truth, given he's been charged with this, I almost want to write back and say, well, in the past, do you understand? I don't know how good a comparison is, and you'll know this. Who were the best mob witnesses? The guys in the mob who knew everything. The fact that Michael Avenatti might be a really bad guy who might one day be convicted of all these charges does not mean he's lying when it comes to Nike paying kids. So if I'm UNLV, I go, look, yes, is there a chance Michael Avenatti's a scumbag? There's that chance. He's been charged with a lot of bad stuff. There's a chance he's not that guy. We don't know yet. But even if he is that guy, if he's insinuating a kid who came to our school got paid, or his, or Ice Manning got paid his handler, we need to look into this to cover ourselves down the line when, if the NCAA ever gets off his ass and actually starts really investigating this stuff, that maybe we don't get hit on the back end.
You got to get in front of
you
the story.
You get in front of this stuff. So I give UNLV credit, and anyone else this guy has said got kids got paid, for hiring independent attorneys and going out and saying, is there anything to this? And why, as a UNLV fan, you wouldn't want that, I have no clue. You want people who are proactive in these situations and get in front of it, so you don't get blindsided a year from now and the NCAA finally says, we're going to do some work here and not let the feds handle all this
right,
stuff.
And
by
morning,
the way, Brandon McCoy got paid, and yeah, they paid Nike and UNLV didn't pay him, but he played for you, so now you're getting hit. Why in the world wouldn't you want your school hiring attorneys to see if this stuff is true? It's a cop-out to say, don't do that because Michael Avenatti's a bad guy. Who cares? The bad guy might be telling the truth. And if he's telling the truth, and Ice Manning got paid these payments by Nike to send them to UNLV, I don't know if that's a direct hit to UNLV. If they get in trouble, I don't know. But you need to find out. You need to do what UNLV or Desiree, or whoever, the president, whoever out there made this decision. You need to hire an attorney and say, you got to go, is this guy telling the truth? Did one of our kids get paid to come here? Who wouldn't want that? That's the stuff. I mean, I went back and forth on Twitter until, these people started getting, completely rude and everything in terms of the F-bombs. I'm like, you have to do your due diligence. You have to know everything there is to know about Brandon McCoy's recruitment. You have to know everything you can find out about Ice Manning. You have to find out. Look, this is the one thing Avenatti's tweet absolutely said, and I commented it when you read the tweet. You don't think people said, why the hell is Brandon McCoy going to UNLV and not Oregon? You don't think that was out there when that kid? I'm not saying it worked out at UNLV. He certainly did not become the player people thought he was out of high school. He struggled defensively. There were a lot of things about his game, I think, once he got to college, like, oh, he's got some work to do. But in the moment of that commitment, I guarantee you, the high percentage of people across the country said they paid that kid. There's no way that kid's going to UNLV over Oregon. Tell me why. Why? Because the handler has a good relationship with Menzies? Give me a break. That's nonsense. I absolutely know across this country the coaches raised their eyes and smirked when that kid said, I'm going to UNLV over Oregon. Why would you? Oregon was like coming off a Final Four. Have you been to that campus? Do you know how Oregon treats those kids in terms of Power Five and the Nike and the Flash and the money and all of that? Go take a trip to Oregon. So when that kid committed here, I'm sorry, that's the reality. People are like, what? What are you doing that for? That team hasn't been in the tournament in 4 or 5 years. You're going there? So the fact that this guy insinuates he got paid, you're living under a rock if you don't think people thought that at that moment. Everyone thought that. Why wouldn't you? It's like, why is it? It's like if he went to Boise or San Diego or any other Mountain West team. It's like, what are you going there for? You're a 5-star kid, like top 10 or whatever you were, and you're going there? Now, why is that? That's just reality, man. That's what people thought. So when he comes out with these tweets, do you think most people blinked like, we kind of thought something was going on? But UNLV now is doing the smart thing and trying to investigate this and do their due diligence. So like I said, down the road, when Emrit and his people want to stop with the buffoonery of these committees that don't ever really change anything for any good, and they just come up with these bizarre, solutions, if they really look in a deep dive and want to really know how dirty their sport is at the highest levels, yeah, you do your due diligence if you're UNLV. And I don't know why Duke wouldn't do it. Now, maybe they are. Avenatti says they're not. Why, if you're Duke, are you not, why aren't you hiring attorneys? Why aren't you looking into this stuff? Don't you want to know? I don't get it, man. I don't get people ripping anyone hiring attorneys. I'd have every attorney I could on it. And I'd want to know. And I'd tell the attorneys, you were completely independent of us. We have nothing to do with this because you can't have that crossover, right? They have to be independent attorneys. You say, this is what he has said. We'll give you all the information we know about this kid. Now, if you can go and find out if you believe Nike paid the handler, if there's any way you can find out, we need to know. You've got to cover yourselves, man. You can't just hide under the rock and hope it goes away. Why would you do that?
You got to get in front of the story.
Yes.
Not to control the narrative, but just so you don't get blindsided on a Sunday morning on New York Times where they go and blast you. You can't do it, but that's how good organizations work. You get in front of a story.
Get in front of stuff.
Now, there's another part of this, and somebody had kind of like made the statement on one of your threads on Twitter about this, and he didn't use an F-bomb. But what he did say is like, and are you a little disturbed that even though the lawyers and the tapes say that, you know, Sean Miller and Wade were knee-deep in impropriety with their programs at LSU and at Arizona, yet nothing has been done. Wade gets a new contract, and Miller's not going to go anywhere.
Well, that goes to the point of Emmert and his and the NCAA and that organization. At this point, it's a joke.
Are you disturbed, though, that there isn't a public outcry of, like, this is awful? Like, well, nobody is calling for Sean's
maybe
job
maybe I'm disturbed, but I'm not shocked at all because I just think people have become immune to the fact that college basketball coaches cheat. I just think people understand that.
And that maybe that's the sad truth of this whole thing.
I mean,
that
people just want to win. What do you think Arizona, and by the way, the guy who's dropping the F-bombs to me, what a shock. I click on his Twitter profile, and there's nothing but Arizona things there. That guy doesn't want Sean Miller getting fired. All those recruits got the number one, recruiting class in the country. We get back to the final, or we actually can get to a Final Four, not back with Sean Miller, get to a Final Four with him finally. You think Arizona fans care if he paid kids if it means going to the Final Four? It goes back to my statement yesterday about Vegas Golden Knights fans. You give every Vegas Golden Knights fan who've been whining on Twitter for the last month about that call and whatever happened there, and you say, okay, switch places with the Sharks right now. Will you take it? Will you take the hits that they're taking in the media about these calls, but you're two games away from the Stanley Cup final? Are you going to take that? Everyone will say, sure, we'll take it. Of course. So when the shoe's on the other foot, it's like, yeah, we'll take that. So, yeah, if I'm an Arizona fan, okay, we cheat to get kids, but the guy's got the number one recruiting class. So you're right, Clay. People are immune to it. Fans just want to win. You really think fans care if guys are getting paid? They don't get paid. I mean, yeah, I'm disturbed about it because I think it's a joke, and I think that Emmert stands up at the Final Four of the year, and I'm at one of his press conferences, and he's got Condi Rice leading these committees, and they say, you know, we're cleaning up the sport. No, you're not. You're not cleaning up the sport. I don't know what happened. There was a kid this week. It's not important who, but go back and look if you want to see. Arizona got a commitment from a kid this week who's a transfer from one of the best programs in America, and he was considering other schools, and he went to Arizona this week. What kid goes to Arizona right now?
It's a landmine.
Who would? But unless, like we said, someone's convinced, kid, we're not touching Sean Miller. Everything's fine. Just go. Who would go to Arizona right now? Unless you've been told, we're good. I mean, this kid, you know, I mean, you can read back. He went to Kentucky. He had a lot of options. It's not like he had to go to Arizona. I mean, he could have gone anywhere. Most anywhere.
But he could have gone to very lofty, easy perches where there's going to be a lot of stability.
And he chose Arizona?
Yeah, the less stable of all the perceived programs. Apparently
not. You're choosing Arizona after all that's happened?
Apparently very stable environment.
It's a long way of saying I think UNLV is doing the right thing. I think they're trying to get in front of what might be bad, might be good, might be nothing. You don't know. But they have hired – I think it's money well spent. I think out there they've spent money poorly on logos, and I think this way it's money well spent. I think you need to get in front of anything that might come down in the long term over Sean Manning or Brandon McCoy or anyone in that group getting paid to come here from Nike for whatever, you know, for whatever reason. And maybe nothing comes of it, and you know it just is what it is, and they can't prove anything, and it happened or it didn't. But to insinuate that UNLV should not do this, or Arizona, or Duke, or any of these schools should not do this, I'm sorry, is ignorant. You have to get in front of stories. I think she understands that. She's an attorney. Desiree, I think her background in these situations, at least, is really good for UNLV. Because I think she understands the last thing you want is what Clay Baker just said, is to pick up, or it'd probably be online from Dan Wetzel, and see a tweet from Dan Wetzel or a Yahoo investigative sports team 2 months, 3 months, 5 months, 6 months down the road, that something's coming down the pike because they've proven Brandon McCoy took money. Why would you want that if you could know beforehand? I don't understand any fan who doesn't want these people looking into this. I don't get that. I mean, if you care about your program and you want it to be okay moving forward with Osleberger and everything to be okay moving forward, you should know everything that happened with Brandon McCoy. And if it's nothing, it's nothing. Like I said, they might look into it and not be able to prove a thing, and you got to go on. At some point, you got to say, look, there's just nothing here, or we can't prove it. But at least you looked. At least you tried to do due diligence.
NHL playoffs with Ryan the Hockey Guy next.
Start your engines!
We have a crash on Flamingo west of Jimmy Durante Boulevard causing problems, as is Charleston at Nellis. We still have traffic hazard on 15 northbound approaching Lake Mead, and police activity on 95 southbound at Anrone. Why? Because there's a huge crash on 95 southbound at I-15 on the on-ramp. So the right shoulder is blocked at 95 southbound at I-15. Expect delays. We also have a crash on 95 southbound after Valley View. Center lane's blocked.
Scenario one, you grab your leather jacket and helmet, hop on your
early morning services trademark.
Close quarters, it came back to him again, and so he connects circle to circle to Krug and then back up for Pasternak. But by him, and they say no icing here, so it is Slavin with a little over 9.5 to go. A turnover there, Pasternak dealt it off, score! Bergeron! And it's 3-0.
818, you'll want to hear it. Stump the Wizard. We finally show you how smart Clay, the producer, is, or how not smart he is. It's my turn to look smarter than him. 830, Doug Kazarian, ESPN, Caesars Deal. 9 o'clock, no idea why, Steph McKenzie. And at 9:30, DJ Allen, coaches versus Canson. But here he is. He's live. Walked in. Scared the heck out of us. No one comes in here in the morning. It's like, who the hell's coming on the door? It's Ryan Wallace, Ryan the Hockey Guy on Twitter, at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. VGK Insider Show, pre and post over on Fox Sports. How are you, buddy?
Great.
Good. Awesome.
I had such a problem with my phone last week that I figured I'd just walk in the door.
Well, we had problems with phones this week also. It's a phone problem around this joint. Before we get to the refs and the calls and what happened in Game 3 San Jose, I want to ask you, I'm watching the basketball game. We were at McKenzie River, my son and I, last night, enjoying a few pops and watching the basketball game, but that was I had to almost, like, twist arms to even get the basketball game on the one side because everything was Boston Carolina. Like, can you just do one television? But I kept my eye on Boston Carolina, and the jerks are out. So I don't know if you're surprised Boston won. Were you surprised about the sweep? I mean, how good are they, and what happened there?
I guess before the series started, if you would have told me that it was a sweep, I'd have been surprised. Yeah. Just because Carolina had been playing so well, but it had been a while since they had actually played a game. And I think that is kind of the big story of this series, is Carolina looked pretty good in Game 3. They were okay in stretches in Game 4, but they were abysmal in Games 1 and 2. And if it took them two games to get themselves back to where they were, you kind of worry about teams coming off of a sweep. You saw it earlier this year, right? So the New York Islanders sweep the Penguins, then they get swept by the Carolina Hurricanes, who then get swept by the Boston Bruins. Nice. It's just been a weird, ridiculous postseason. But I don't think a sweep for Boston is going to have the same type of rust effect that it did for Carolina.
That's my next question. No matter who comes out of St. Louis, San Jose, and I think there's a very good chance it could go at least six, if not back for another San Jose 7.
Yep.
And my next question is to you, let's say it's the Sharks, and they're kind of rolling. They win the third straight Game 7, and they're like, here we go. And there's Boston, who's been out for, that have to be at least a week or two, or a week, 10 days by now.
Yeah.
Why don't you think then San Jose would go in with, like, that's kind of an edge because of what's happened before?
Well, because when you look at the Bruins, they didn't have to play, quote, playoff hockey from January until now just to get into the playoffs.
Right.
They didn't have to do that. They've got an older team that's got a lot more miles, especially Zdeno Chara, who missed Game 4 because of an injury.
Yeah.
So any rest that this team can get right now is only going to benefit them, I believe. When you look at Patrice Bergeron, a ton of mileage on him. He's still relatively young, but a ton of mileage. David Krejci, ton of mileage. David Backes, ton of mileage. So, and they play such a physical brand of hockey that I think if they have a chance to get healthy in the next 7 to 10 days, I think that does them well. Plus, they're going to start at home. And they've got home ice in the Stanley Cup final. And I think if it is San Jose, they haven't started a series on the road.
That's true. Mm. Didn't think about that. That's true.
So whether or not they're coming in playing, and to be honest with you, I don't think San Jose has been playing their best hockey through any stretches of these playoffs.
Like one game here, one game there.
One game here, one game there, but even within games where they play technically well or they win a game, it's like 8 to 10 minutes at a time. This team has not put a consistent 60-minute effort into any game except for maybe Game 6 against Vegas.
Here.
Yeah, which even then they were being dominated in every metric but the scoreboard. So I don't necessarily think that San Jose is playing burn it down, lights out hockey. And I don't think they're going to do that over the course of the next potentially four or five games. I think they are just one of those teams that can take advantage of other teams' mistakes.
And Peter DeBoer, the Sharks head coach, kind of pushed back on the perception that the Sharks are lucky. And I think that, you know, in contrast to last year where you'd have Gerard Gallant saying, you know, there's a lot of puck luck that's going on in our series, and we were happy to embrace the luck, but Peter DeBoer continues to be in denial of it.
I don't understand it. Like, to believe that getting breaks somehow makes you a bad team blows my mind.
Yeah.
Because we've seen a lot of really good teams get really awesome breaks, and they've done nothing with it. Like, no one's taking away the credit of San Jose for scoring four power play goals
right.
on the five-minute major. No one's taking away the fact that San Jose, by definition of the rules, caught an offside, and they challenged it. And they took a big risk and a big gamble, and it paid off, because if they got that wrong, they'd have been shorthanded.
Yeah.
But what did they do? They go down, they score the third goal of the game, and that's what ices it. They took advantage of a break. Just because you're getting breaks doesn't automatically make you a bad team. In fact, it makes you a really good team for taking advantage of those situations. So I don't understand this aversion to saying, yeah, we're getting breaks, but you know what I like about our team? We're taking advantage of
it. Yeah, I haven't heard anyone, even the people who are so upset at these calls and upset at San Jose getting all these calls, then followed up with, well, they're just not that good. I've heard no one say that. It's like, no,
right.
I think everyone understands how talented they are.
I mean, they were the sixth best team in the league.
Yeah.
We know they're a good team.
We know they're good.
We know individually they have game-breaking
right.
players.
Right.
That's what makes this so difficult, is when they do get those breaks, they're able to cash in.
Yeah.
And you can't be mad at them. Like, other teams, St. Louis in that game got a break. David Perron shoots the puck over the glass.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't
yeah.
get called. Yeah. What happens? David Perron scores on, like, the next shift when he should be in the penalty box.
Right.
He took advantage of a mistake.
Right.
The same way that the San Jose Sharks did on the hand pass. Now, it's egregious sure. for a game in the playoffs to end that way.
Right.
But it's anarchy in the NHL. And I don't understand how four referees on the ice miss it. I don't get that.
So let me ask you this, because I'm sure you read this quote. Rod Brind'Amour, the Carolina Hurricanes coach, he said, "Here's I'm going to ask you what he, I'm going to tell you what he says to do,
mm-hmm.
and then tell me why or why not it would work. Take two refs off the ice," said Brind'Amour, who has a 20-year NHL career before retiring in 2010. "Put them in the penalty box. Have their skates on if they want. One guy can be watching the call. The linesman can be watching offsides. Get them out of the way. They're getting in the way. It's hard. The game's too fast. You watch how often the puck hits them. To me, you can get these calls done quickly and done right, and that's all you want. As a player, as a coach, as a fan, just make sure you get it right, I think." And then he goes, "But we'll see." And I'm sure he's saying, "But we'll see," because everyone always believes there's change. These people go in a room, and they come out, and there's never change. So react to that. Take two off the ice. Keep them in a box situation where they're looking at different things.
Yeah, I kind of talked about something a little bit similar to that on the show yesterday. I was saying, you know what? If you can't get it right with four guys on the ice, put one guy up in the press box.
With a monitor and everything.
With a monitor and everything. He can
right.
see all the different angles.
Right.
So if there is a play or there is an infraction
like this,
he calls yeah. down. Like, when we saw the four referees on the ice huddle up and convene, that's when they can say, "All right, we're calling up to the guy
yeah,
in the
Jimmy's
press box.
Jimmy's up in the box.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jimmy, what'd you see?"
Hand.
It's a hand pass.
Right.
It can't count. There's no way.
Right.
It can't. But at the same time, that needs to be reviewable. It's not reviewable. Currently, right now, a hand pass that leads eventually to a goal is not a reviewable play.
Which makes no sense.
It doesn't
make
any
sense. At any level.
The NHL's rule book is, for lack of any better word to describe it, stupid. It's stupid. It is a dumb rule book, especially when you consider that Gabe Landeskog on the offside is a part of the play enough to make it offside,
yes.
but not a part of the play enough to be too many men on the ice.
Exactly.
How do those things live in the same universe? I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. But that's the rule book. It's intentionally ambiguous. It's intentionally stupid. And I think that if this has shown us anything, it's that there are major, major concerns with the rule book, with the referees, and with the state of this game. How long ago was it where we had that moment where the Buffalo Sabres lost a Stanley Cup because a skate was
right.
in a crease, and that was against the rules, but it stood,
right.
and it's what it is. We're on that path right now, again, years later, and I don't understand it. It doesn't make
I
any
don't
sense.
Either.
We
Not
shouldn't be here
no.
again.
It's embarrassing. I mean, and you can say the same in football, anything. I mean, we're in 2019. Clay and I were saying we're holding phones that can make us a sandwich and take us to the moon, but you can't review a damn play. I don't understand that. I think that's I think that's arrogance. I think that's people who, again, it's a very small example, but I will say of the commissioners, I do think Silver is the most progressive. And this is a very small, it has nothing to do with the players. But the other day, the NBA, I'm sure you saw this, the NBA changed the rule on when the summer work can begin. It used to be at midnight, which was completely stupid. People calling people at midnight. I was the first one in. And Silver's like, what the hell are we doing that for? Let's do it at like 3 in the afternoon. We'll get a lot more media coverage. But he also said, and this was the key, he goes, are we just doing this because we've always done it this way?
Right.
Like, that was his point. He's like, what the hell are we doing this for? I mean, and his point was like, just because we've always done it, and I see this in this hockey. Oh, we've always done it. Like, God forbid we change anything. It's right. Like, evolve. And your athletes have evolved to where they're bigger, faster, stronger, to where I think Brendan Moore is correct in that you have referees who can't keep up now. No fault of their own. You're talking about young, strong, fast men on these skates. So if they're evolving, how can't you evolve in the boardrooms with these owners and make your game better? I can't grasp it.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But it's for the same reason that Don Cherry gets all of the play that he gets when he's reacting to the Carolina Hurricanes having fun.
Yes, Don Cherry.
Why can't that? But that's hockey culture.
That's hockey
and
culture.
And that's been hockey culture for so long that it's going to take a little bit more time, clearly, to change that.
And a lot of the old timers, I'm telling you, probably agreed with Don Cherry.
Oh, 100%.
Which is buffoonery.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I think that lost a little bit of the luster for the Carolina Hurricanes. Like, I'm not saying that because they didn't do a storm surge or they weren't doing that stuff that they got swept by the Boston Bruins. I just think the Bruins were a better, more complete team. But they lost a little bit of something going into that series, and I don't know why. But I think it might have something to do with the fact that they changed who their identity was right before the playoffs started. Or midway through the playoffs. I don't know. It seems that there was something underneath the surface to me with Carolina as to why they did not perform in the Eastern Conference Final. And I don't know why that is, but Brendan Moore's comments kind of alluded to that yesterday. He said, I expected them to look like they did in this series.
Right.
In series number one. I'm surprised that it happened here.
And yeah, he thought when he got to the end there in the Eastern Conference, you'd compete a little more, or that would not be a sweep. You might lose because the other team's better, but not that way.
Yeah, it was.
They could just never get going.
No, it's just a really tough note to end the series and the season, because up until that point, greatest story in hockey.
Awesome.
And
it's awesome.
And that's the funny thing: the greatest story in hockey to everybody else, all the casual fans, all the people that want to be interested in this game, is a team that has fun and plays for each other.
Yeah.
But it's the worst thing in the world to old-time hockey people. And it blows my mind. I don't get it.
That's the voice of Ryan Wallace, a.k.a. Ryan the Hockey Guy, on Fox Sports 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, from 2 to 3, the Golden Knights Insiders with Frank Harnish. Hey, real quick before we wrap up, the Seawolves get going on the Western Conference Finals. There's a few Golden Knights getting ready to play. Should we make a road trip next week when they go to San Diego?
I think if you are a Golden Knights fan and you want to see Cody Glass, Nick Hague in a playoff atmosphere, in a playoff setting, you see what they might be able to do in the NHL when they get here, especially in the case of Nick Hague. I think he will make the team out of camp next year. Then I think it's a quick drive, and you're doing yourself a favor. So go to San Diego. It's a beautiful, beautiful city, and it'll be fun. So you get to see some Golden Knight hockey without actually watching the Golden Knights.
Huh? No. Why not? Why wouldn't you go down there?
Yeah, let's take advantage of it. Yeah.
You driving?
Yeah, I will, because we'd be in a wreck.
You wouldn't allow me to drive.
You have to drink your water. So what's on the show today, and what's on Rink Rants?
Show today is just going to be kind of pulling apart the Carolina Hurricanes, trying to figure out if the Boston Bruins are the best team remaining. Spoiler, I think they are. They're most complete for sure. And then whether or not the NHL is going to be able to figure out a way to not screw up the remainder of the games. Although,
are there any refs left?
Not really.
Some poor guy's going to do like 30 straight games. I'm kind of tired, guys.
Yeah, not really. And to be honest with you,
a lot of water.
I was rooting, and I'm going to continue to root for, I don't care who plays in the Stanley Cup final, I don't care what happens in the series, but I want there to be a game 7. I want there to be an overtime goal, and I want it to be mired in so much controversy and to be the absolute wrong call that a fan base totally loses it, and the NHL has to say, well, we didn't see that coming.
I do want that to happen. I will go more specific. I want it to be Jumbo against Boston just to see the chaotic art lunacy of this town, but also it's so controversial that they have to win on a they have to win the cup now in controversy. They can't win on just a normal goal.
Yeah, that would be boring. That would be boring.
Against Boston, and like, exactly. That would be insane. Okay, so I don't want to tease anything, but you would pick Boston. If San Jose gets there, can they beat Boston?
Can they? For sure. Right. Why not? Because they've defied the logic all playoff long. I think they can, but I do think that home ice advantage is going to mean a lot more to San Jose than it does necessarily at any other point, and I don't know that they can win a series that they start on the road.
Do you think they get by St. Louis?
I still think St. Louis has some fight. I think it's going to go seven. I do think it's going to be a long series.
Boy, a third straight game for Shang Peng. Third straight game seven. That kid is going to need a long vacation, that poor Shang Peng.
He's all right. He'll be fine.
Him and DeBoer in the Caribbean together?
Yeah, really, like toasting each other with coconut drinks? It's going to be great.
He'll avoid anything that has Lucky in the name.
Thank you, buddy.
Ryan, man. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, buddy.
Ryan, the hockey guy, tonight from 2 to 3 on awesome Fox 98.9.
Awesome stuff from Ryan. Follow all his stuff for Rinkrats and over on Fox Sports. He and Frank do a terrific job. Awesome Vegas Golden Knights coverage. So that was fun. Can you imagine some kind of controversy with Jumbo Thornton, like with 2 seconds left against Boston?
What could only hope?
Explode!
I mean, could you cross your fingers enough, please? Oh. More controversy.
Oh my God, that would be awesome. I just want them to win, not only to win for the chaos here, but like win on another controversy. That would be hilarious. Like people would lose their minds here. Not that they haven't already, but I mean, they would just implode if that team won on like some weird call
or if Boston wins on some weird call to keep Thornton from winning a Stanley
Jumbo
Cup
from getting his,
and then you would have like the double reverse controversy where everyone would be happy in Las Vegas that the Sharks did lose.
Oh, they throw a party down in Fremont. There'd be a parade.
We would have that parade finally. Thank God for it.
Thank God for the parade. All right, when we come back, we'll continue with the news, and you want to stay around till 8:18 because it's called Stump the Wizard. Stump Clay, the producer. I'm looking forward to it.
This is going to suck.
ESPN Radio 1100 and 100.9 FM is KWWN Las Vegas. K265EZ. In the morning, when you want the news, you need the front page every hour on the press box.
Nothing's riding on this except the First Amendment.